Cable News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Oregonians have been feeling the effects of climate change the past year. Whether it was the cold snap, the heat waves, drought, or the prolonged wildfire season currently raging in the state's forests. The state's lead environmental agency, the Department of Environmental Quality, released regulatory language for its climate protection program recently. It was created to meet an executive order by Governor Kate Brown, but environmental advocates say it falls short with loopholes for major polluters and little consideration for equity. I spoke with some environmental advocates to learn more.
This is Erica Morehouse. I'm with Environmental Defense Fund. I'm a senior attorney that works in our U.S. climate program.
And my name is Allie Rosenbluth. I'm the campaigns director at Rogue Climate, which is a grassroots climate justice organization based in Southern Oregon and the South Coast. And I also serve on DEQ's rulemaking advisory committee for these greenhouse gas regulations we'll be talking about today.
Very cool. So yeah, let's jump into that. The Oregon Department of Environmental Quality recently released regulatory language for its climate protection program, which is intended to be a significant part of the state's strategy for meeting climate goals. Before we get into the benefits and limitations of what has been proposed, what does the regulatory language encompass and why does that matter?
Thanks for the question. So it matters because the agency is responding to an executive order that Governor Brown put out in March of 2020 that called on all of the state agencies to use their existing authority to meet a set of science-based targets so that Oregon could get on track to be able to address the climate crisis and do its part. So this set of regulations come from the environmental agency within Oregon that is responsible for climate and air quality regulation. And so they should really be a foundation for ensuring that the state can meet those targets along with the other actions that are happening at other agencies.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what I would say is what's significant here is this is the first time the state of Oregon is looking to regulate climate pollution in the state of Oregon and really looking at the fossil fuel usage in our state and how we can begin to reduce that. Unfortunately, these rules really fall short and they leave out loads of polluters. They give polluters opportunities to buy their way out of actually reducing pollution where communities need it most. And so we are pretty disappointed with where these rules are at now. However, we are excited that, you know, Oregon is taking its first step to address this pollution that we know doesn't just harm our climate, but harms environmental justice communities who live on the front lines, who live next door to these polluting facilities, and who are experiencing the public health and safety impacts every day.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about that. Equity was a center focus of the climate legislation that was passed by the Oregon legislature this session. So how does equity and environmental justice factor into the climate protection program? Are the protections for that sufficient?
Yeah, that's a great question. So Rogue Climate was part of the Oregon Clean Energy Opportunity Campaign that worked so hard to ensure that in our 100% Clean Energy for All bill, equity was always centered. Unfortunately, in this greenhouse gas rulemaking process, we have seen DEQ really fall short in its promises to uphold equity as one of its main goals. So I think the biggest example of this is just the amount of exemptions that DEQ is making from this program. So DEQ has proposed to exempt the entire electric sector. So that's frack gas power plants, which are the largest polluters in the state of Oregon. They are proposing to exempt methane leakage from pipelines, the pollution from compressor stations, and liquefaction facilities of natural gas. So that means DEQ's proposed greenhouse gas rules would actually give Jordan Cove LNG a free pass to pollute if it was ever able to be built. So they're really opening the door for polluters to continue polluting without consequence, which is not how we get effective climate action and effective action to reduce the harmful co-pollutants that we know are harming communities at these facilities.
I would add from the national and global perspective that we do know that low-income communities of color around the world are going to be disproportionately impacted by climate change. So the exemptions that Ali is speaking about also really matter in terms of whether Oregon is meeting its overall climate objectives. We need a program that covers polluting sources and puts a firm limit on carbon pollution so that Oregon can do its part in the global fight over that we is really critical over the next 10 years and can affect and benefit the local communities that are at the front line of pollution, as Ali's mentioning.
Yeah, so speaking of this rulemaking process, what was that like? Who is in on it and what are their interests?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I was one of the few advocates at the table. The majority of the rulemaking advisory committee was really made up of people who had interests in fossil fuels, whether they were fossil fuel corporations themselves or industry that rely heavily on natural gas. That is who was at the table, along with some of our partners, including Verde, Coalition of Communities of Color, and a few more. But, you know, month after month, when we would come to these, you know, 8-hour-long Zoom meetings, we just continued to not be listened to. Community members would show up and testify. They would say, hey, you can't leave out the largest polluters in the state because that disproportionately impacts communities of color, low-income, and rural communities. And it doesn't take action on climate the way that this executive order says we should. But month after month, we saw DEQ continuing to weaken the rules, to create more exemptions, to open up more loopholes for polluters to continue polluting instead of real climate action, which we know means reducing the combustion of fossil fuels, especially in these largest polluters in the state who are able to continue polluting through the way the rules are written currently.
And you've both mentioned that there are a few types of polluters that aren't included in the caps on emissions that are set by the DEQ, namely industrial emitters and electricity plants that export power out of state. What is the impact of their exclusion?
The biggest impact will be that those polluters don't have a firm limit on their carbon pollution. So in terms of the exporters, they're not regulated at all. The industrial polluters will basically have the opportunity to say what they think they can do, which is not a very motivating way to create actual reductions, and they will not have any firm obligations to reduce their emissions.
Another impact that I see of this, especially in regards to the industrial polluters, so those are, you know, plants that are creating, they're manufacturing, and they're using a lot of fossil fuels to be able to do that. So for folks to kind of have an idea in their head what these industrial polluters are, because there's no limit on how much the industrial polluters can pollute climate pollution, there's also an opportunity for new industrial polluters to come in without really any sidebars of ensuring that, you know, we're reducing the amount of climate pollution coming from that industry, or even that we're not adding new industry, new facilities that do harm to the communities that they're proposed in. So I think when we think about this program, right, we're thinking about the climate pollution, right, that's, you know, methane and CO2, carbon dioxide, that's entering our atmosphere to warm our planet and cause, you know, the devastating wildfires we've seen, drought, the heat wave. You know, everyone in Oregon is experiencing it, especially communities who are on the front lines. But we also have to think about this program in terms of what are the co-pollutants, so the pollutants that come along with these greenhouse gases that are happening at these plants. We know that when we reduce greenhouse gases, we can also have a really big impact on communities nearby these facilities. So, you know, we have the opportunity to strengthen these rules to ensure that not only we're taking real action on climate, but also that we are reducing the harm that is happening to communities who live near these facilities by reducing these co-pollutants that can be carcinogenic, that can cause asthma, that can have a really big impact on people's day-to-day lives, and we know are having a big impact on Oregonians' lives, especially Oregonians of color, Indigenous communities, and rural and low-income communities.
Yeah, and kind of to that point, the Environmental Defense Fund found that the proposed approach to the cap allowance program would give out-of-state oil companies $14.3 billion in free allowances or free pollution over the course of the program. And so you spoke to this a little bit, but what should the policy aim to do instead?
One of the tricky things about this policy is that it is happening through executive authority. There were multiple efforts to pass legislation. So we think that the policy has fallen short in terms of finding creative ways to make sure that all Oregonians are going to benefit from the value that is created by this program. It's going to create some small investment opportunities that should be targeted at the most impacted communities. But that really is a drop in the bucket when you compare it to the numbers you mentioned, the billions of dollars of value that are going to be given to businesses for free that they could either just use to pollute for free or that they could actually trade and monetize and turn into cash. So we think that DEQ should have done a better job of ensuring that those businesses have to be responsible for the value that they're receiving and finding more ways to invest in communities.
Luckily, we do have an opportunity to strengthen these rules. Right now, we are in a public comment period where community members can send in their concerns and what they want to see changed about this program to DEQ. And there are also going to be two public hearings in September, one on September 22nd and one on September 30th, where community members will be invited to testify to DEQ and the Environmental Quality Commission about these rules. If folks are interested in that, I would recommend checking out Rogue Climate's Facebook and website for information about a workshop to get everybody prepared to speak at these hearings on September 21st. We don't have details yet, but we are working on it with some incredible partners who have also been really concerned about these rules.
And I would add, in terms of what listeners can do and what they can ask for when they do raise their voice, the idea that businesses are getting all of this value for free, one big ask would be that DEQ actually strengthens the ambition of the program so that they lower the limit of climate pollution that they're allowing in this current program, which will actually mean that the polluters will be getting fewer free allowances, fewer sort of cash value and ability to pollute for free, and could also increase the ability to invest in communities and create those kind of value and investment opportunities especially for the communities that need them most.
Yeah, thank you for highlighting that. So you mentioned that, I mean, this rulemaking process, the regulatory language, is a result of executive action by Governor Kate Brown. So what is her responsibility? What is her role in the way that this is executed? Is that something that she has approval over?
Governor Kate Brown isn't the final decision maker on these rules. The Environmental Quality Commission, who oversees this agency, DEQ, will be making a decision on whether or not to approve these rules after they're revised after the comment period in November or December. But Governor Kate Brown's executive order definitely directed the state agency to start developing a climate protection program. And we think that her office should be speaking out about these rules, because right now they currently don't reach the mandate of the executive order. They are far below it in the climate reduction goals, and then also just how many exemptions exist in the program. So we really think that Governor Kate Brown's office should be working as hard as possible to adapt these rules, to become stronger, to reduce more pollution, and also create more benefits for environmental justice communities who are on the front lines of climate change and polluting industries.
And I would just add that the Environmental Quality Commission members who will be voting on this are appointees of the governor. So she obviously could have a lot of influence. And Governor Brown has put out this executive order, has put Oregon forward as a climate leader. She had a recent New York Times article asking Congress for climate action and noting the activities and the progress that Oregon has made. And we think that her voice actually creating actions that will back up the commitments that she's made are really critical, because we have to have laws on the books that will actually limit pollution at the levels that she has indicated Oregon is committed to.
Do you have any final thoughts before we wrap up? Anything we didn't get to cover?
One thing I would say is that I think a lot of us, probably a lot of your listeners, I know that as a parent, I have a lot of climate anxiety, and it is easy to feel disconnected and disempowered. This is a situation where people can raise their voices, can ask for specific outcomes, and really have an impact. This is a chance to take real action that will affect the climate this and our ability to address it. So I feel really empowered every day knowing that there's things that I can do and actions that I can take that I'll be able to tell my kids that here's what I was doing. So I just really encourage all of your listeners to take that opportunity and raise their voices on this.
We are having a comment writing workshop online Monday at 6 p.m., so after this airs, to help people write comments to DEQ. It will be online, and folks can register by going to Rogue Climate calendar, our event page, or there is a short link, which is bit.ly/0830_CPP.
Well, thank you so much for speaking with me today. I really appreciate you both taking the time. That was my conversation with Allie Rosenbluth, the campaigns director at Rogue Climate, and Erica Morehouse, senior attorney with the Environmental Defense Fund. Find links related to this story on our website, kbu.fm. This has been KBU News In Depth. I'm Althea Billings. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for COVID Noise Filter.